Good afternoon. It's a good being with you again. Welcome. I welcome you with all my heart. Ask yourself the question, why am I here? What purpose do you have? What goals do you have? What do you think you are? If you know you are good for nothing, then you're right. If you think you're something or somebody, then you have to see the truth and realize that you are good for nothing. You did not come to this earth to become somebody. You came to this earth to discover that you're nobody. Nobody. You have nobody. The body that appears real to you is a delusion. It appears real just as a dream appears real until you wake up. The question often arises, should I take the world seriously? The answer is yes and no. There is no standard answer. As long as you believe you are a body, a mind, an entity, then the world becomes very real to you. But when you investigate, when you intelligently begin to search within yourself, you begin to realize that the world is very changeable. It is never the same. Things often change. As a matter of fact, the only thing permanent in life is change. How could something be real that is changeable? You say a tree is real. If the tree were real, it would remain the same forever. But it started from a seed. You would say the seed is real. How long is the seed real? Until it begins to break apart and the tree begins to grow. Then the seed is no longer real. When the tree is small, you say that's a real tree. Yet when you come back 20 years from now, it's a gigantic tree. It's altogether different. It's growing apples or peaches or whatever. It's no longer the same little tree that seemed incompetent and was unable to grow anything. So you say that now the tree is real because it's bearing apples. You come back in another 20 years, the tree is dried out. It cannot bear apples. This is true of everything. including your body. You came from a seed. The seed turned into a baby. The baby turned into a teenager. And now you're your own ugly self. What are you? Are you a baby? Are you a teenager? Are you an adult? Are you an ugly self? Are you handsome? All these conceptions are erroneous. You are none of these things. And the reason you appear to suffer and have so-called problems in this world is because you take life too seriously. You have your own dogmatic opinions of what should be right and wrong, what's good, what's bad, how things ought to be. If anyone interferes with your belief system, you become mad, you become angry, you fly off the handle. That's an expression, fly off the handle. How can you fly off the handle? All these cliches.
How can you not fly off the handle?
These sayings. But anyway, even if you don't fly off the handle, there's something wrong somewhere because nothing is ever the same. Things make you angry. Things make you react. You believe your life is supposed to be orderly. If there is no order in the universe, how can your life be orderly? You're part of the universe. You begin to understand it makes no difference what is happening in this universe. The universe expresses all sorts of things. Earthquakes, calamities of all types, volcanic eruptions, droughts. Everything happens to this world. Yet the world is spinning in space, revolving at a fantastic speed. The whole universe is movement. Nothing stands still. How can anything be real? If it isn't real, why would you react to it? Why do things bother you, annoy you? Because you believe that things, the world, the universe is real. The only way to stop that belief, to put an end to it, is to investigate yourself. You start with yourself. You cannot start with anything external to you, for you don't know anything about it. But you know that you exist. There's no doubt about that. You exist. Therefore, you begin to question, who is it who exists? What exists? Is it the body that exists? The body will not be around 100 years from now. But I can think. about these things. So body in itself, kind of thing, it is an inert substance. What thinks? Who thinks? You begin to question yourself. The only reality you will ever find is the reality of yourself. Not the reality of the world. Not the reality of the universe. It has no reality. As you begin to study, investigate, intelligently look at your own existence, you begin to see the world as an illusion. It's an appearance. And as you unfold on the path of knowledge, you no longer take this world seriously. This doesn't mean that you walk around not caring about anything, not being concerned, not giving a helpful hand to someone. You do not become sarcastic or belligerent or cynical. You realize the world changes constantly. Therefore, it cannot possibly be real. So how can you take the world seriously? Yet you also realize that if you can't get rid of I am the body idea, or I am the doer idea, you have to sort of become a little serious in the world. It's a paradox. You are not to take the world seriously, yet if you can't get away from the body idea as being real, then you also have to see the world as real and take it seriously. You are brought up to take everything seriously, to have goals, ambitions. Where do these things lead you? Look at the precarious condition the world is in today. Man's inhumanity to man is everywhere prevalent. Wars, these dastardly conditions have been going on since the beginning of time. Yet what do you have to do with these things? You didn't come here to straighten out the world. You didn't come here to make peace. You didn't come here to teach people anything or to show anybody anything. You were here in order to wake up to awaken. To awaken from the mortal dream. That's all you're here for. You're not here for any other reason. How about your life? What life? What life do you believe you have? You really have no life. You appear to have a life. Water also appears in the mirage. But you're just as alive as the water in the mirage. In other words, you are an optical illusion. You're not who you think you are. You're not what you think you are. You aren't anything. Whatever you can think about, you're not that. Yet you can think. You have the capacity to think. And it is your thinking that will take you out of the great lie of existence. For you begin to examine your mind. You begin to understand that your mind is nothing but a bundle of thoughts. Just thoughts. Always thinking, always thinking. Always thinking about something. There's hardly a time when you do not think. And it's always about yourself in relationship to something else. From morning till night, you're concerned with I, me. But you are not I and you are not me. Therefore, why should you be concerned? You always believe you have to look about your interests. Take care of your problems, your world. Or you imagine all kinds of things will happen. There's some of you who have been employed for so many years, and you're always worried about being unemployed. You believe that's the worst thing in the world that can happen to you. Then it's probably the best thing that can ever happen to you. So it makes you move into a new venture, into new experiences. The truth is, you can never suffer. There is nothing in this universe that can make you suffer. If you're suffering, it's your mind that is telling you things about someone or about something or about some place or about some condition. And this is why you suffer. You have allowed yourself to think. You're believing your thoughts. Your thoughts control you thoroughly, completely, absolutely. Your thoughts are your worst enemy. You learn, therefore, to grab a hold of your thoughts. By practicing self-inquiry, or by observing your thoughts, becoming the witness to your thoughts, watching yourself think, as you continue practicing sadhana, you're headed towards illumination. Yet the funny thing about this is that you're already there. And there's nothing you have to do. You always believe you have to do something. You were brought up to believe that if you do nothing, you're a lazy bum. Yet you are nothing. Nothingness is your true nature. You are what you're supposed to be. Everything is predetermined as far as your body is concerned. And you're going through those experiences that are necessary for your fulfillment and your unfolding. As you become wise and you begin to understand, you no longer react to your conditioning. Fear begins to melt. There's no longer anything to fight. You do not have to win any points. There's really no one you have to overcome. There's no situation you have to heal. You merely have to be yourself. Be yourself. How do you become yourself? By understanding that there is one self and you are that. There is only the one self. People call it by all kinds of names. Nirvana, Satchitananda, Absolute Reality. It's called by all kinds of names. God. It makes no difference what you call it. You have to be it. You have to be that self that has always been and will always be. You have to lift yourself up to that place where there is no world, no universe, no body, no mind. It really makes no difference what sadhana you practice. Whether you practice Zen or Taoism or mystical Christianity or Kabbalah, what you practice makes no difference. But what are you doing with the practice? Are you really diving deep within yourself? And finding your own reality? Or are you still reading many books? Going to many lectures? Becoming totally confused? Leave the world alone. Do not try to correct the world. When I say correct the world, I mean correct people, places, or things. Everything has a tendency to balance itself. There are certain laws in this universe that take care of itself. There's a power and a presence that knows the way. And you are told to surrender to this power, to this presence. Complete surrender. Not my will, but thine. This is the highest teaching of any system. When you give up your ego, totally surrender, and allow the powers that be to direct you and guide you and take care of you and unfold as you. Everything will work out. I recall at Ramana Ashram, there was an Indian who was sort of a disciple of Ramana. And he used to come every once in a while, not steady. For many, many years. Yet nothing happened in his life. So as the years passed by, he would begin to badmouth Ramana to others. Try to tell others, Ramana's not real. He's just an old man who doesn't know what he's doing. He would convince some people of this. When Ramana heard about this, of course he didn't care one way or the other. But the point is, the situation took care of itself. He didn't show up for a while. Then the news came that a train hit him. And his body was gone for this incarnation. The point I'm trying to make as everything works itself out. Everything takes care of itself in due time. You have nothing to fear, and you have nothing to fight. You have to learn to have faith in the powers that be. Those powers are within yourself. You are they. They are not external to you. As most of you know by now, the only thing that's external to you is your mind. Your mind has created your world. The world that you believe in, the things that you see in this world, the things that you feel, your frustrations, your happiness, your joys, your miseries, whatever you think is real for you, you have created yourself. Otherwise, where would it come from? The world just is. It isn't good or bad. It just is. It is you who make it good or bad. It is you that have opinions of how things should be, how they should look. The world itself has no opinions. It just appears as it is. But you give it life. And as you see all these dastardly things going on, and as you see these things going on in your life, somebody trying to hurt you, someone's trying to take something from you, as if you can lose something. What is rightfully yours will always be yours. What is not rightfully yours, no matter how you try to hold on to it, it will leave you somehow. The beginning of wisdom is to understand that the things that appear to be in action to make this happen are simply a creation of your mind. So to whom will you be angry? To whom will you vent your emotions? Whatever you say, whatever you do, however you react, you're doing it all to yourself. There's only one self. There are not two selves or three selves. There's one. And everything that comes out of your mouth, out of your thoughts, out of your actions, are only for yourself. If you are hurting inside, it is only because you feel that the world isn't turning the way you want it to turn. Things are not going the way you think they should go. You've got to grow up, some of you, and let things be. You have to learn to leave people alone, to leave the world alone. If there's anything you want to change that you don't like, look within yourself. The person, the thing that seems to hurt you, is only a vehicle of your own karma. No one is responsible for anything that ever happens to you. When you understand all these basic things, it is only then that you can begin to work on yourself and practice things like Atmavichara, self-inquiry. But as long as you're still hurtable and you're still reacting to conditions, you have to sort of reconcile yourself with the whole universe. Find peace by turning within. Next time difference will happen. Do nothing of what's happening or what may happen. Turn within yourself. See the reality of your own being. Understand your true nature. Begin to drop the whole world from your mind. By realizing this is not the truth. The tree is not the reality. The sky is not the reality. My body is not the reality. My mind is not the reality. Negate everything. Negate the whole universe. What's left over is you. The self, pure intelligence. Ultimate oneness, absolute reality, consciousness. Power of Brahman is your real nature. Happiness is your real self. Not just temporary happiness, but permanent happiness. It is your real self. Everybody is searching for happiness. And the reason they do the things that they do, hurting one another, stealing, causing problems, is because at that stage of their existence, they believe that's how they become happy. They're really searching for eternal happiness. But that's like the man who sits under a shade tree and feels comfortable, then decides to go into the sun. And the sun burns him, and he screams and he cries and he gets upset. Why is this happening to me? Then he goes back under the shade and he feels comfortable again. Then he goes back into the sun and burns and becomes violent and miserable. It keeps going back and forth, back and forth. Only a fool would do this. Why not stay in the shade and remain there and don't go out? That's how it is with us. Just the way we are now, this minute, is perfect. Just the way you feel right now. You feel peaceful, you feel calm, you're happy. But then you go out into the sun. This means you go out into your workplace. You go out into the world. You begin to externalize your life. And you get burnt. You become miserable. Then again, you run inside your house where you're alone. And you feel peaceful. You feel at home. Instead of staying put, you keep going back out again, involving yourself with all the vicissitudes of life. And when you react to these things, you exacerbate the condition. Then you wonder why you suffer so. And why didn't you sit still? Literally, you do not have to sit still physically. I'm talking about in your mind. Everything begins in your mind. You make your mind still. When your mind is still, your body can go anywhere. But you will be in the shade all the time. You can do anything. You can snore. You can cry, you can laugh. But this is an external appearance. When the mind has become quiescent, there is always peace. Find that peace. It's yours. Never react to a situation before you can look for the peace in your mind. And then see if you're going to react. There's a story of an old samurai warrior. His master had been killed. He began to search for the killer of his master. He searched high and low. Finally, one day, he found out who it was. And he cornered him, drew out his big sword, and was about to chop his head off. When the villain spit in the samurai's face, the samurai moved his head back, sheathed his sword, and started to walk away. If you take them one at a time and work on them, things will start to happen to you. See, those of us who come here are tired of playing mind games. We want to become free. And you become free, and not wanting to become free. It's just abiding in yourself by being yourself. And if you follow those four principles, you will become yourself very fast. But you have to think of them all the time.
May I ask a question?
Of course.
When you spoke about the first principle, it spoke a lot to what was going on with me. And I realized the answer is that however, I've been unable to live it. You know, my situation is that as a teacher, it has been extremely stressful. It's hung in my heart. I also hate the situation.
Change it.
That's what I wanted to ask.
It depends on where you're coming from.
I haven't been able to transcend.
So change it.
How do I do this without knowing? I have no.
Look at your past.
Yet.
Look at your background. Look at your background. If you've seen that you've changed things a lot in your life, and things are still bad, then don't change it, work on yourself. But if you've not had negative experiences, and this is pretty bad for you, then change it.
I have a pattern of being in negative experiences. One particularly is in regard to working in the world, jobs, and just making a living in the world. I teach and burn out, and then I take ill-paying jobs, and then I go back to teaching. And in this job, which just about did it to me physically, I'm getting back on my feet now a little bit.
Find out who's going through those experiences. You're not going through any of those experiences. You're free. Find out who's free and who's going through those experiences. Separate them.
May I still change the job if that presents itself as a possibility?
By all means.
And so I don't. I'm in a job that I mean, a figure of speech in my heart says I hate. It's hard for me to get myself up in the morning to go to it. Very hard to. I don't have to force myself to keep the job because that means doing my practice.
Mm.
Is that wrong? Is that wrong-headed?
No, it's not.
It means that I'm not deep. Clearly that I'm not deep enough. I know I'm not deep enough.
You're going to find that things will improve for you this year.
I'm sorry, I didn't understand.
Things will start improving this year for you. To your liking.
Would When you said ask to whom these things occur, then you, that's self-inquiry, right? You send it self-inquiry, right?
Well, of course it always does, if you do it in the right way.
Because if you ask who hates it, it turns out to be the evil, right?
Doesn't work for me, not in the experience.
Then don't do it.
Yeah. I mean, I have a hit for it, an intuition I share.
Mm.
But it does not take me to the experience that I'm not the mind of God. It does not see suffering. Suffering doesn't see. I do not go to the point of a cessation of suffering by inquiry. And yet, the teaching is true, it rings. What seems to work partly for me is a surrender, a giving up.
Mm.
But it's not sufficient. The giving up isn't sufficient. I realize that, and I seem to lack the whatever, whether it's the strength or the inside, or there's still fighting, there's a partial giving up, hence there's tremendous suffering.
Then simply quiet your mind, sit still, and do nothing. Everything will happen by itself. What you're doing now. Become still. Do not try to do anything to yourself. If thoughts come, just watch them. And everything will take care of itself.
Sense.
That makes perfect sense.
It's a matter of depth.
That's when you abide in the self, when you do nothing and everything stops. All action stops. And no matter how things come to you, you don't care. You just don't react. Even death makes no difference. No, you can't say that because that's the ego again.
Mm-hmm.
But when you just sit and all fear leaves you, something else will take its place. And that will be bliss and happiness. When you stop fearing.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So just sit and let all the fears come. Smile and sit still.
You can just look up and detach it, right?
Just watch them. Let them come. Let them do the worst. Let them drive you crazy. And you don't care.
Yeah.
Let them. But you try to stop. Now let them. Just whistle. Sing a song. Do nothing. And watch what happens.
So you're talking basically about
self-observation? Not even self-observation, because you've got to think about that to be self-observation. You're actually just doing absolute zero.
Just being still.
You've turned yourself off. And you have the attitude, even if I die right now, so what? Doesn't matter. Even if my worst fear manifests, good, let it.
That seems difficult.
No, not really. It seems difficult, but it's easy if you do it, if you try. Get by yourself and just sit down, put your hands together, and do absolutely nothing. Don't tell yourself you're watching or you're practicing anything at all. Give all practice up. Give it all up.
So you can question your whole mind and study it.
Yes. Definitely. Give everything up. And let the worst come.
One problem with my job is I have to get up at 5:30 in the morning. And I meditate best in the morning, just on waking. that it had been eliminated from my life in the last 2 years, and I find it hard in the evening because I've been home so stressed out. I still will try this, but I felt crippled by not being able to meditate in the morning.
Can you get up half an hour earlier?
I will have to get up earlier.
Your problem is this. You think you have to meditate. You don't have to do anything. No, just be yourself. You don't have to meditate, you don't have to do anything. Be yourself. Just the way you are.
The path that Robert teaches, it's really, really blew my mind because I was on a different path and I've been meditating for like 8 years. I've been taught that you need to meditate. It's a dualistic path. Well, whatever, right. If I
I was.
Right. Well, but the thing about what Robert has taught me, I mean, there are many things. First of all, that the gross doesn't come about when you're conscious of it. Even here, like, it's not coming about through words, yet it's happening. It's not through words. And the same growth in your lifetime does not come about when you're sitting and meditating. Not that that's that. But even while you meditate, if you're trying to meditate, I used to have to sit away and have a practice in a silent practice, whatever. Now, if I do sit to meditate, according to what I've learned from Robert, it's just I don't know, it's just like I am. What I am is the feeling that's behind when I say I am. So whatever that feeling is, that's, I don't do anything. I don't think. I don't not think. And I just try to be like Robert. And I see how it sits. So
I understand.
So the growth that occurs. So you know, in a way, he was saying that maybe you don't have to meditate. If you want to meditate, that's fine.
Because it's beneficial.
Right.
Being still, and I realize you can be still in action, but I do find it, especially when you're teaching, so
yeah. It's not only
being still.
It's not only being still, but you know, I still like to sit, and as Rob is saying, you don't even have to sit.
No, I don't.
And I understand how growth is occurring, you know, but I'm trying to still myself, I'm trying to put, I'm, you know, Rob has said, do these things, I'm trying to do that, and I find sitting quietly helps me to do that. Although it's not, you don't grow just when you sit quietly. It's a 24-hour thing, and it's always, and it for me it changes. I mean, if I'm out during the day, I may ask who am I? Who to whom does this is for me? And it's like,
it's important that you make your life simple.
That's the thing. It's very complicated.
When I say simple, I mean your mind. A person can do 20 different things, but mentally not doing anything at all. Detach yourself from everything. Go to work if you have to. Come home, wash the dishes, eat. Do what you do. But don't think about it. Don't get involved in the thought process. Just by doing that alone, something will move you to wherever you have to be. In other words, what I'm saying, when you go out of this situation mentally, you'll be forced to leave by the momentum of your mind. When you're doing what you're doing without attachment, without being the doer, without thinking that it's hard or easy, it's like being in school or graduating, and the momentum will pick you up and put you at the next plateau wherever you've got to be. So if you're supposed to be in China, something will put you there. You'll wind up in China.
Mm-hmm.
That's your next step. You've got nothing to do with it. Exactly. You have absolutely nothing to do with it. There's a mysterious power that takes care of everything. All you've got to do is abide in yourself. And you do that by keeping still.
So he's talking to us that we are not the doer, we are not the doer, not this.
You know how he blew my mind, because I was always taught like it's so many different paths in meditation. The key word is kind of like self-realization. Mm-hmm. And almost the first time I met the Father, he says, there's no self and there's nothing to realize. And this is in the words.
It's not doing anything and different from how the tapestry looks.
Yes, it's different. Because you're not witnessing.
You're witnessing the doing.
Yes. There's nobody to witness. You're just empty.
Well, I can see that that's true, okay? And things appear, and there's no one really witnessing, because that hasn't come into being yet, as far as the witnessing goes.
Mm.
So, obviously there's no one doing it.
So witness, there has to be an ego.
So the witness would come later and say, oh, I've got to witness this.
Yes. Just watch.
Can you say just witnessing goes on without being aware?
Without being aware.
Pardon me, without being aware?
Yes.
Aware.
It just happens by itself.
It does just happen by itself.
Mm.
Yeah, it's always happening. This hard manifestation goes, it's always happening.
When you're not aware of your comings and goings, it means you've arrived.
As a person?
As a person, as mine.
And as a mind?
Mm.
Is there a difference?
Well, as a person is all your actions. Mind is all your thoughts.
Okay. So the thoughts are still something.
And when there's nobody left to pay attention to the comings and goings of your body and your mind,
okay,
then you've arrived.
Okay. Paying attention to it, that's a key, isn't it?
That's okay.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So if the thoughts are there, just like the buildings are there and the sky is there and so on.
They're just there.
They're just there. You have nothing to do with.
Nothing to do with you.
Someone.
Exactly. Uh-huh. That's why the example I always use every time is the sky is blue. If you go outside and show me the sky and say, look, Robert, how beautiful blue it is. I would agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
But in reality, there's no sky and there's no blue.
Right. Right.
So in reality, there are no thoughts and there are no actions. There's nobody to act, there are no thoughts. It's like hypnotism.
Do I need to realize that?
You just have to be there.
Okay.
It's like you've been hypnotized.
Did you see the truth of it?
You don't even know that, no. There are no words to explain. You're just there.
You with that self.
And that's what bliss is.
Yes, there is a touch of that. It's kind of like practice without practice.
That's right. John, what do you think of all this?
I try not to.
How do you think this affects your music?
I think that Raman and Shakti are the same thing. That manifestation and non-manifestation are the same thing.
You're right. True. The music will go on. Mm-hmm. But you've got nothing to do with it.
That's the work I have to do. It's to, if it's meant to go on, then my work is to get out of the way of it.
The music will become more beautiful. But your ego will not be involved.
I still have, I have an appreciation for the beauty of, well, we all have an appreciation for life. And the need to love life, the manifestation of life. And I think that that aspect, manifestation, is the same thing as, well, the mother aspect of God.
Mm.
And that.
Well, where did it come from?
I recently read, I was reading the story of Ramakrishna and how his teacher brought him into samadhi.
Mm.
And he could not, Ramakrishna could not experience it because he was too attached to the mother, his love for worshipping the mother. And I forget what his teacher did, I think he picked up a piece of glass and
put it between his eyes. He pushed it between his eyeballs.
Okay, yeah. And to bring him to one point of this.
Yes.
And so I can see how we can be too attached to the beauty of nature.
Well, look at it like this.
But also, later, Ramakrishna's teacher began to realize that Shakti was simply a manifestation, was simply the same thing.
Mm.
That in appreciating the beauty of a tree, you're also appreciating the non-existence of the tree too, or God, and that it's the same thing, that we can worship God in mindlessness or one-pointedness, in asking who am I, but also in seeing God in manifestation. Are we not, isn't that the same state?
It depends what state of consciousness is speaking from.
Mm-hmm.
As long as you are aware that all things are of your mind, that you're creating the universe out of your own mind, then you can worship whatever you like. But look at it this way again. I appreciate a flower. So I take the flower into my room, and I worship the flower. And 2 days it's dead. So what have I accomplished? I become disappointed, discouraged. So it is with life. We worship somebody, we worship something, and everything changes. And then we become disappointed. But like you said before, if we worship those things as the self, that's a different story.
That's what I was going to say. If you see that all is one, then
that's different.
Yourself.
So, and you can say also the manifestation is not really a lot of that either.
True.
Is that what Ramakrishna did?
Hmm. See, that's why in the beginning stage, you learn to shy away from everything. Because you realize everything is duality. It's transitory, it comes and goes. But then in the realized stage, you begin to love everything again. Because it's all part of the self. You just see it differently.
So his appreciation of nature is appreciation of the self. Right?
Exactly.
The one that's leading you are.
I can see that there is also within reality life and death. God or Brahman also has the qualities of Shakti, that perhaps by understanding mother, that there is life and that there is death and there's constant change, maybe that's also an aspect of the Father, a constant renewal.
Mm.
That God is not stagnant or is beyond constant. There's a constant, if you can imagine life and death at the same time, constantly renewing and constantly dying at the same time, and that perhaps nature is, the aspect of a mountain lion consuming a deer is merely the aspect of Brahman consuming itself.
If you can see it like that, then you're okay.
I think that there is, that nature is simply a manifestation of the qualities of the Godhead. And
this is true, but from your talking, you have a tendency to separate both of them. Again, the Godhead is myself, everything is the self. So when you're talking about that, realize the self you're talking about. You're talking about yourself.
Right.
The tiger consuming the deer is yourself. It's going on within you.
Right.
And if you see it from that aspect, then you can go back into duality. It doesn't matter.
So, at that point, then there's neither duality nor unity.
Mm-hmm, that's right. There's just bliss.
I see in the ecosystem. That aspect of nature which has had eternity, thousands of years to work out balance, and life is coexisting with life. That helps me to, when I'm in that ecosystem, it functions like music does, and it helps me to understand how I can balance my own life, and helps me to see God.
But you're still separating yourself. Look at
it. Yeah,
well, right now I'm speaking as the ego, John Sherman. Yeah.
Look at it this way. It's like this. It's like you're having a dream, but you're aware that you're dreaming. You're awake in the dream.
Okay.
And you know you're participating in the dream. But you know that you're dreaming, and you're going to wake up. It's the same thing. Except that we have a tendency to do it, because we get involved in the dreams. We see the dream as real.
Take on a
block. Yes. We get involved.
We
have emotions. And the dream becomes more powerful. So we're giving power to the dream.
Uh-huh.
Thus we suffer. That's why we suffer. But if we're always aware it's a dream, we can't suffer. It's impossible to suffer.
Yeah.
Because you're aware that you're dreaming, and the dream is going on, and you're in.
I've been recently wondering about, the question came up about whether it's enough to change one's lifestyle.
Not to change one's lifestyle?
Hmm?
Not to?
Whether or not to make the decision to change something in one's life, or to accept it. And
there's no standard answer, because it's determined by the person, by karma and everything else. Everybody's different.
What I've been thinking about is what part does the so-called science of mind, creative visualization, what part does that play in our lives as far as imagining something first so that we can then manifest it?
That's completely mind power. It's all mind.
Is it natural, though? Is it natural for us to do that as human beings?
We have to learn to do it also. It's like going from grammar school to high school. And we learn all about the mind. And then when we learn all about the mind, we have to go higher and drop the mind from prison and go beyond the mind.
Plus, which wouldn't creating your own realities, as they call it in those beliefs, would also, all of that, as well as the substance, is predestined. So whatever reality you create on that certain level wouldn't happen anyway. You were predestined to create that reality.
Are we not co-creators with that destiny? Do we have a part to play in that?
No, we're not co-creators at all. There's only one creator. There's only one. There's not a car. And you are that one.
That's
the
part of the
great self. Everything else is mental.
Seeing the mind as a tool in the process of creativity.
Well,
I know that I'm not the mind, but can I not learn how to use my mind naturally in the process of creativity?
As long as you use the mind, you've got to suffer. Say you use the mind to become a great musician, and you're going to play a concert in London, then the plane crashes and you're dead. That's the use of your mind. But if you go beyond that, and you understand what the mind is and where it comes from, then you begin to realize that the only freedom you've got is to turn within and see the truth. Everything else is karma.
Once you're not as attached to the greater process, it becomes more enjoyable sometimes. Because you're watching something manifest itself. If you're not, if you're watching it, you're watching yourself do it, rather than to be immersed in it.
And kind of knowing that you're not the doer.
Yeah. There's much less ego or knowing ego, or whatever you want to call it. You know, if. And then it's like doing work, it's like doing anything else. You do it better. You start because you're not there.
Mm-hmm.
You're there, but you're not.
Yeah, it sounds paradoxical. When you know that you're not the doer, you just do it. That sounds like a paradox, but it really
is. So you can create a whole world with your mind.
Yeah.
Your mind is very powerful, but you've got to watch out what you create. Which is
right. There is no mind.
We should bring it down as ask yourself, to whom comes this mind? Where did the mind come from? Find out where you got the power. Where did it come from? Where did all this power, this mind come from? Ask yourself.
Where this thinking has led me is that there is that aspect of mind, whether it's subconscious or world mind or universal mind, that's able to see what I need in my life better than me. And so the words seeking the kingdom make sense. And to me it makes sense that is part of creativity, that in seeking the kingdom we are manifesting it, we are also creating it. As part of our reality. And if that's the case, then there's no need to think or create anything other than that. because the universal mind knows what we need in order to live a balanced life.
How does it know? Where does that knowledge? Where does the knowledge come from?
Self.
Exactly. So you've been given the power all the time. And it's always outside of yourself. It's all the time it comes from there. Take back the power. Do not think anything has power outside of yourself.
Well, if I see that the world is also the self, I can understand that. But the illusion is also the self, isn't it? There is nothing other than the self.
What self are you talking about?
Brahma.
There's so many self.
If you're talking from the standpoint of power of Brahman, then everything becomes love, compassion, and joy. Yes. In other words, you treat your enemies and your loved ones alike. You look at an animal and a human being, and you put the same thing. You stop the fragility. You don't do it consciously. It just happens like that. So the closer you get to self-realization, the more unity unveils itself. You might become one with every living thing. There's no difference.
And everything is living, so you're one with all things.
For all things.
She said you see the future of all your enemies. As
the same.
As the same, okay. You're feeling the same, although you may not say the same thing.
It depends who's talking.
Depends who's talking, yes. But there's no one talking.
That's why silence is the greatest teacher. When, Narada came over to my house the other day with Joy and some other people were there. There was a big conversation going on. What was I doing?
Sitting at the
I just sat there. So I'm not too good of a conversation.
Are you
gotten
the conversation?
Yes.
But you still saw it anyway.
I saw it. It was, well, it was very blatant because he was sitting in a chair and it was kind of in the middle of the room. You know, it was like nothing around him except the meeting that was above. And it was something. Hang out with Robert a little bit more, we'll see. Like what I was saying about meditation earlier, it's like self-realization, there's no self, there's nothing to realize, so when you sit and meditate, there's no meditate. It's just, you're just sitting there, and everything is perfect as it is.
Yeah, well, you say to meditate, you realize God is basically...
Right, the whole idea of absurd, and I knew that, and when I saw Robert sitting there, like I visualized, I saw what I knew. And it would be perfect if he could just come here and sit here in silence.
So don't invite me to your party.
That's why you have a party.
Now remember also, I didn't consciously say, I'm going to sit here and say nothing.
Right.
There was just nothing to say. In other words, don't put it on. Someone's imagining like that. I remember one time when I was in Fallsburg, New York. Muktananda invited me over to see him. When Muktananda was alive, remember him doing it? So it was having all the shakti going on. And everybody was jumping up and down, doing all kinds of things. And screaming and going crazy. So I was really amused. He went to all the monitors and says, throw this guy out. Throw that guy out. Throw this guy out. Because they're all putting it on. They're all playing games. They imagine all kinds of things are happening to them. And spirits are doing all kinds of nonsense. So the point is, be yourself. Don't put anything on. Do not imagine you're somebody else. Just be yourself.
You told me that in the front. So it's a way. Is that a way for us to give myself during the day to be as natural as possible?
And what about at night?
Pardon me?
What about at night?
What about at night? Same thing.
Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Well, are you saying be yourself or be the...
The same thing. I mean, just think of constantly, I am myself. Just that alone makes something happen.
Don't, you know, what you think you're saying is don't make this self any different from the person. It's with everything else.
In the beginning stages, you try to separate the self from your body. You say, I'm not the body. Then there must be something else. So that's duality. But as you advance, you realize there's no body. There never was a body. There's only the self, and I am that.
Which is the fourth principle.
Yes. In other words, what you believe is your body is the self, but you think it's the body.
Because
you're not limited to a body.
Is it possible to experience the self through focusing on, say, a waterfall or a tree? Something outside of our own body presence.
It can give you a good feeling. Give you a very high feeling. But there has to be an experience there to experience. But no experience there exists. So as long as you are the experience there, you'll be experiencing all kinds of phenomena. When you transcend the experience there, then you are the waterfall, or the mountain, or whatever. There's no difference.
It's the same. It's the same obstacle, though, isn't it? The obstacle that's in the way of realizing the self within the body is the same as realizing the self within the waterfall.
Yes. You are the obstacle.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
So you are the obstacle?
You are the obstacle,
yeah.
The mind. The mind,
yeah. But aren't you, isn't he talking about the oneness of all things? Isn't that the experience?
Well, if the self is in a tree, as well as within inside us, then should it not be possible to get in touch with the self by meditating on the tree, rather than on one of our own chakras, or
in a way, but as long as
you ask who the tree is.
that separation.
Well, that's a good
analogy. A good analogy would be, instead of trying to look at the tree, look at everything as one big eye. You know, like this is an eye that sees, but we're all one, this is all an eye. There's nothing to look at. An eye that just exists by itself, which is the same as eye. There's nothing to look at. Because you're the eye, and that's the eye. But you're not looking at anything. You're not looking at anything, because then you're looking at something. And saying that's an eye. But you're part of
it. Then it still would be imagining an eye, and I'd be looking at it.
No, but you don't imagine the eye, because everything is the eye.
That's
really
true. The EYE is the same as
the eye. Yeah, I know. You're not imagining an eye. You are the eye, and that's the eye. And it's not looking at
it. And waterfall is the eye, and that
looks at the waterfall is the eye.
And meaning is the eye.
That's an easier way.
When the average person looks on the tree, they don't really see the tree. They have a concept of the tree.
I have an experience that seems to be wrong. I'm saying this, I don't know how it happens, but it feels like everything is myself, or sometimes it turns around and I feel like I'm not there. It's so obvious in that experience. I call it experience from this point of view. From that, when I'm in that, it's like there's obviously nobody there. It's just
I know what you mean.
And later I say I experienced that, but at the time there's no one there experiencing that.
Mm.
That's what it feels like. And I don't feel anything. I don't feel like I'm here.